All right, good morning. Good to see all of you here this morning, despite the weather. I was remarking to a few of you, I'm surprised how many churches are canceled today. I came in all the way from Cedar Springs without any trouble with the roads or anything like that. So anyway, what we got before us today is Lesson 119, and I am dealing a little bit with a cold here, so just have to bear with me a little bit. But we have Lesson 119, the Stam GBC Controversy, Part 3. The reason I'm spending so much time on this is to make sure that we get some of the stuff down, both on paper and also for the record. I ran into a website a couple weeks back that had sort of a timeline of major events in major dispensational events in history. And it mentioned a split between Stam and Baker, and then it said something only to the effect of reasons unknown, which I thought was interesting that the person would put it that way, because probably didn't really know what all of the reasons were. So we are spending some time on this to make sure that we are being fair to both sides and hearing from people on both sides of this dispute, both the side of the college and the GGF, and also the side of Stam. What we've looked at so far is we spent a lot of time looking at the spring 1966 publication of Spirit of Bereanism by David Weddle. Then we spent time looking at Stam's response to that and Farrell's letter to Baker last time. And then the college's sort of a proposed statement on behalf of the faculty of the school regarding the controversy. So if you look at your notes today, introduction, as the calendar turned from 1966 to 1967, the controversy that began brewing with the GGF regarding their only approved institution of higher learning did not relent. In fact, the new year saw an expansion in both the size and intensity of the controversy. The spring 1966 publication of Spirit of Bereanism by David Weddle in the Journal of Grace Theology proved to men like Stam and Farrell that their long suspected fears of neo-evangelicalism and intellectualism were making headway amongst the faculty and staff of Grace Bible College. Farrell's July 1966 letter addressed to Baker was first step in bringing this disagreement to open controversy. Let's review points from 2 weeks ago. Whether or not there was a lull in the controversy during the winter months of 1967 is difficult to determine. While we suspect not, it is important to note that DeWitt's file in the GBC library is relatively devoid of evidence of any letter-writing activity during the first 4 months of 1967. DeWitt's files pick up the trail again in May of 67. Please note that we do not think, nor does DeWitt claim, that his file is a complete collection of all the correspondence related to this controversy. What we do know is that DeWitt saved a copy of everything that came across his desk. So, what I suspect there's not a lull. In other words, the debate is not going away, but there seems to be, for at least judging from this one file, a time period of relative silence with respect to the letter writing that we saw occurring in the previous year. When May comes around in 67, as we're going to see here in a moment, this is going to resume itself, again, with some real important things being said on both sides. So, major events then of 1967. May 1967, special addendum to Truth Magazine. Open letter to unnamed pastor. Now remember that Truth Magazine is the official periodical of the GGF, okay? So this is going to be sort of the GGF side of the emerging controversy. At the top in italics, one reads, "The pastor of one of our Grace churches written to the college stating that he has received warning that Grace Bible College is becoming neo-evangelical and since one of the chief tenets of neo-evangelicalism is anti-dispensationalism, he must know if there is any truth to this charge. There may be others who have become upset by similar allegations, and therefore we have felt it wise to print this reply as an open letter." So what the GGF is doing here is responding to the allegations that are being made, specifically by Stam and Farrell, regarding the incursion of neo-evangelicalism and intellectualism into the faculty and staff of GBC. So this is going to be of the colleges, partly of the response of the college and the GTF to the rumors, and so it's published just in the form of an open letter to kind of give their thought. Okay. The college defended itself against all tenets of neo-evangelicalism or, quote, any other ism, which in any way, whether in doctrine or practice, conflict with our doctrinal statement. In other words, the college's position is that they were against any portion of the neo-evangelical agenda that contradicted the school's doctrinal statement. Having stated this fact, they expressed some outrage over why or how such an accusation could be made against them. Now I'll stop there for a minute. Remember when we finished up last week and we were reading about this proposed statement on the part of the faculty where they basically said we should have academic freedom with respect to any subject matter that is not specifically stated in the GGF and the doctrinal statement of Grace Bible College. So here we see basically them picking up now and publicly setting that forth. Okay? So what it says here, the college defended itself against all tenets of neo-evangelicalism or, quote, other ism, which in any way, whether in practice or doctrine, conflict with our doctrinal statement. So what they're saying is we are against any portion of neo-evangelicalism that would contradict our doctrinal statement. If it doesn't contradict our doctrinal statement, then it's not officially sort of off-limits, I guess is what you would say, which is very, very similar to what we saw at the end of Lesson 118 about the proposed statement on behalf of the faculty to the College Board regarding their, quote, academic freedom. So let's look at the quote now from this open letter. As you have stated, neo-evangelicalism is an anti-dispensational movement among evangelicals, and we can hardly understand how anyone could even begin to bring such a charge against Grace Bible College. Since it is the only school in the country that has for its main purpose of existence to proclaim the Word of God rightly divided according to the dispensational principle of the unique Pauline revelation. Perhaps we have not sufficiently communicated this fact to our constituency, but we will point out the following facts. Number one, the college has the same doctrinal statement as the Grace Gospel Fellowship, and every board member and faculty member is required to annually subscribe wholeheartedly to this statement. And then I provided it for you here to consider. Number one, the verbal inspiration and plenary authority of the Bible and its original writings. Number two, the eternal trinity of the Godhead. Number three, the eternal deity and spotless humanity of the Lord Jesus Christ. The total depravity of man by nature. Salvation by grace through faith in a crucified and risen Christ. The eternal security of the saved. The personality and deity of the Holy Spirit. The essential unity of all believers of the present dispensation as members of the one true church, the body of Christ. The privilege of duty of all the saved to walk as children of light. The communion of the Lord's Supper as revealed through Paul for members of the body of Christ till he comes. The one divine baptism by which believers are made members of the body of Christ as the only baptism necessary in God's spiritual program in this dispensation of the grace of God. The resurrection of the body, the pre-tribulation rapture of members of the body of Christ, the personal premillennial return of Christ to reign on earth, the eternal punishment of the unsaved dead, the worldwide preaching of the gospel which Paul calls my gospel in contrast to the gospel of the circumcision. Now, there's the doctrinal statement as it appeared in this open letter in Truth Magazine. Okay? So what they're saying is, we are for all of these things, and we've never taught anything contrary to these things, and so any pieces of the new evangelical agenda that would be contrary to the dispensational points that are set forth in the doctrinal statement, we would therefore be what?
Against.
Okay? So, in this regard, they're very similar to what that statement was that the faculty was making to the College Board that we looked at in the previous lesson. Now, before we go any further, does anybody have any questions or comments about this? If you read the doctrinal statement, particularly the last point, does the doctrinal statement make a distinction between Paul's unique gospel and the gospel of circumcision? Yes. Okay? So any, at least as it is articulated here, so any position that would say that Peter and Paul are both preaching the same gospel would be a violation of what? The statement as it stands as of 1967. Okay? So that's all, those are all sub-points under their first point, that they have the same doctrinal statement as the Grace Gospel Fellowship, and that every member of the faculty and board is required annually to sign a statement of agreement with those tenets. Okay? So point number two. Further, the college catalog also contains a six-fold statement of objectives, the first of which is, quote, to teach the whole Bible as the inspired Word of God, interpreting it in the light of the revelation of the mystery. Third point. Included in the 35 required semester hours of Bible and theology, all of which are taught in light of the unique Pauline revelation, are a number of courses dealing with dispensational truth. These include a two-hour and a three-hour freshman course, a two-hour sophomore course, a two-hour advanced senior course, and a two-hour senior research course. Text used in these courses include C.R. Sam's Things That Differ, Baker's Dispensational Relationships, Real Baptism, God's Clock of Ages, besides reference works of all of the dispensational writings which have been produced in our grace movement. So the fourth point and fifth point now. Can't remember. Fourth point. In order to ensure our students receive a thorough indoctrination in dispensational truth, the O'Hare Memorial Lectureship has been instituted. One of our grace pastors was brought in for a week of lectures near the beginning of each school year. Past speakers include C.R. Sam, Don Ellison, Clarence Kramer, and Roscoe Kent. Excuse me. Fifth, Truth Magazine, which is the official organ of Grace Bible College, carries regularly not only articles on the uniqueness of the dispensation which was committed to Paul, but from time to time editorials plainly stating the commitment of the college to this truth and our criticism of non or faulty dispensational approach to the Bible. So, they're basically defending themselves here against the idea that they are neo-evangelical, meaning they're anti-dispensational. You need to start seeing something, as I've considered this now for probably more hours than I've ever thought I would think about it, there's some emerging trends here that you need to understand. The first one is this. It was always the position of the college that because that they were not neo-evangelical in the sense that they were never anti-dispensational. Okay? Their statements, not only by the part of the faculty, which you saw in the previous lesson, but this statement here, do leave open the possibility of exploring items of the neo-evangelical agenda that were not explicitly addressed in the doctrinal statements of the GBC and the GGM. Okay? And the faculty and the professors of the school claimed that it was their academic liberty, if you will, to do that so long as they were teaching things that were a direct violation of the doctrinal statement. Any questions or comments about that before we finish this point? Okay. Given all these factors, the signers of the document express frustration as to why anyone would charge that the college had joined with neo-evangelicals in their anti-dispensationalism. In the end, they state, we trust that this letter will allay any fears which you may have have been about creeping neo-evangelicalism or liberalism at GBC. The letter was signed by Charles Baker, Jack Dean, Dale DeWitt, Raymond Rich, Don Ellison, Vern Schutz, Kenneth Springstead, Vern Stromberg, William Rigg, Arthur Anderson, Tessa Baker, and Evelyn Beyer. F. Pickett was on leave out of the country and therefore was not able to sign. Okay. The letter is important for a couple reasons. First, it establishes a clear position on the part of the college that they had not embraced new evangelicalism in terms of anti-dispensationalism. Second, they do not deny that other aspects of the neo-evangelical agenda were being embraced by members of the faculty. This, of course, left open the door for the entertaining of portions of the neo-evangelical agenda that did not directly contradict the doctrinal statement of the school. Okay? So, any questions about any of this? Nope. I can tell you in my recent conversations with DeWitt that basically the way I've described that there is exactly the way he describes it. From DeWitt's perspective, he sees Sam as thinking that because certain pieces of the neo-evangelical agenda were being entertained by certain members of the faculty, that Sam interpreted that as the whole school is anti-dispensational. So he perceived that to be a misrepresentation of what was going on at the college. At the same time, DeWitt was willing to admit that there were, to varying degrees, professors on the faculty that were, in varying degrees, entertaining pieces of the neo-evangelical agenda that they did not feel to be in violation. Now, next week's study, I have a sort of a list of values ascribed to who was most in line with the neo-evangelicals and who was least in line. And DeWitt has readily admitted to me that he put himself at the top of the list, that he saw himself as having the most in common with their concerns and criticisms of fundamentalism, and that Jack Dean would have been second and Baker would have been third or the most conservative out of those three in terms of how much of the agenda of neo-evangelicalism they were embracing. But these are the official statements and the official position of the college. So they are going to say, and will always maintain, and even to this day, that they have never been anti-dispensational. Okay? But they will also, I think, if they're honest, also readily admit that they were entertaining, that some on the faculty were entertaining various pieces of the rest of neo-evangelicalism to varying degrees amongst the faculty, both in the 60s and probably straight on through till right now. Okay? So any questions or comments about that? Yeah.
Is the statement today,
I believe it's the same, by and large. The one point, Tom, that I'm not sure about, because I know that DeWitt has pressed hard on this point, is the last one about the true gospel issue. Particularly in the 80s, when I talked to him, He basically viewed this controversy between Sam and GBC as sort of having different phases. Okay, the first phase was over the Weddle argument, neo-evangelicalism and intellectualism. Okay, the second phase was over Psalm 8. How DeWitt translated Psalm chapter 8, and we'll get into that later on. The third phase of the Sam GBC controversy was over sensitivity training. It's a psychological method of trying to do sort of group support type things. And then a fourth would be over the gospel issue. So this is the late 60s. This is late 60s, early 70s. This is early to mid 70s. This one is mostly in the 80s.
Okay.
So what he viewed, he viewed Stan's issues with GBC as sort of coming in different waves of issues. This one being the first one that leads to a separation, and then these other ones being sort of things that he's still perturbed by, even after he's left. Even after he's left
the Grace Gospel Fellowship. So, I don't, did I answer your question? I don't remember. What was your question? I don't remember.
I think it is. And I don't think it, if it's the same, DeWitt is clearly, would clearly be in violation of the doctrinal statement if it stands today as it is there, which would be worth checking on, because he does not think that Paul's gospel is in any way distinct from the one Peter was preaching. And he's pushed that quite hard, not only in his professorship, but also in some more recent books that he's got coming out and have come out of late. And he's not sort of budged on that. So he definitely views that as a, quote, problem within Grace theology. So what he's trying to do is find commonality between those ministries instead of emphasizing. He says that others have overemphasized the distinctives there and created divisions that aren't there. Now, he knows, I've been straight with him about how I feel about that, but I don't agree with him. And I think that, you know, there are different gospels and clearly demonstrable, as you know from, you know, the seminar that we did. So those are sort of the different waves of the controversy. Any other questions or comments? Now, June 14 now, go to the next. June 14, 1967. This is a letter to Stan by William Root, pastor of Grace Bible Church in Southgate, California. Now, some of you might be familiar. He's written a couple little commentaries. He's written one on Ephesians. I think he's written one on Revelation, too. Little devotional commentaries. Well, he was a member of the GGF in the late 60s. Now, what we're going to get into now is sort of the personal side of all this, okay? And how Stam may or may not have been conducting himself very graciously. And I'll leave that up to you to determine as we go through here. Root chides Stam for his personal conduct in handling the controversy with GBC. Root called Stam out for seeking to induce people to premature conclusions regarding GBC while seeking to do likewise with others. So what he's saying here is, look, you're upset with people trying to persuade people to an opinion different from yours, yet you're over here doing what? The same thing, okay, trying to persuade people to agree with you. Root mentions having received a letter from Stan, dated June 1st, 1967. He refers to a pastor's retreat in Lombard, Illinois that took place in late 1966. Gleaned from a letter by Pastor Don Ellison, we can date that at the letter that said late 66 is dated June 12, 1967, during which Ellison called for a vote of confidence in GBC. At which time, the only person's word he had for the trend toward liberalism at GBC was Stan's. Since the Lombard meeting, Root conducted his own investigation into the tests being given at GBC. After doing so, Root concluded that the tests currently given at GBC were identical with tests that had been given several years prior when Stan still felt the school was sound. Now, quoting from the Root letter, quote, now I've maintained all of his grammar. So when you see these words in all caps, that's exactly how he wrote the letter to Stan. Okay? Since I made a thorough investigation of the very tests being given at the students this last semester, I showed them to you at our council meeting in Langer's office. Along with tests made several years ago when you felt the school was doing a good job. These tests were identical. Yet you said they were written for the express purpose of impressing you and seven other pastors involved. Now, Brother Stamm, answer this one question. If these tests were written for your benefit only, how could the students taking them this year get grades of between 90 and 100% on them? Someone has been true to the fundamentals of the faith, or the students could never have addressed these difficult dispensational questions. You see, I received both sides of the picture before making a final decision. Rudis, he's fired up now, okay? He's saying, look, you're trying to get people to agree with you based on your word only. I went to the school and I asked to see the tests and the scores to see it, and I've compared the tests with years prior when you still thought the school was doing a good job with the tests that were given this last semester, and the tests were identical. Apparently, Stan's response to that was, well, they were just given for his benefit. But Ruth's reply is no, because if that had been true, the students wouldn't have done so well on them, which is indicative of the fact that they were being taught the doctrine that they were being tested on the test. Root also called Sam out for violating, quote, a gentleman's agreement that was reached not to write on the subject of the controversy, quote. One last thing. It was agreed 100% in that council meeting at Langer's that there would be no more writing reference to this matter. It seems to me that every letter you write, every article you print, is a flagrant violation of that gentleman's agreement, don't you? Brother Stamm, you do not know me very well if you think for a minute that I have been gotten to your words or can be gotten to by anyone. Right is right and wrong is wrong, and I will stand firmly for what I feel in my heart is right. As of this moment, I feel you are completely wrong in two areas, in your methods and in your motives. Now, you see what's starting to happen here? Starting to get personal. Okay? And Root is saying, there was this gentleman's agreement that we all said we weren't going to write or talk about this issue in public, and you've been violating it and with everything you say, everything you write, and everything that you print. So you can see that he's sort of fired up with him here. Stan is scolded by Root for taking statements made by Dean and others out of context and his desire to draw public statements out of them in declaring their positions. Quoting from the letter again. You said in one of your board meetings that you wanted Dr. J.T. Dean to come out in the open and state his position relative to fundamentalism. Well, Brother Jeff Farrell's answer to my letter to Mr. Hayes gives you exactly what you wanted, it seems to me. Jeff says that lately Brother Dean is saying he is 200% fundamental. Is this not what you asked for? The term fundamental in neo-evangelical couldn't even be defined at the Lombard pastor's meeting. When Dr. Dean made the statements that he learned to lean toward neo-evangelicalism, it was a long time ago and then out of context. What he was referring to was the point that they, neos, made fundamentalists need more love for one another. We are proving this right now. So, here you're really starting to get to see the personal aspect of this. After making the point regarding Roman Catholics being fundamental, Root concludes his letter by calling on Stamm to use a quote, a little love and grace, and to look ahead to see where the road leads you wish to take us down. We are too small an organization to divide. We need and must have cooperation and togetherness based on the message of God's grace and the revelation of the mystery for which we all, you, the school, and our grace churches, and I, stand for. So, here we see people beginning to question Stamm and his motives. I do not suspect that wasn't going on previous to this letter, but this letter is really drawing it out sort of in real stark terms. Many, many people involved in this controversy, particularly on the side of the GGF and the college, viewed Stamm as behaving very, very poorly and very, very underhandedly with them in the way that he was dealing with the controversy. Any questions about any of that?
Okay. June 30, 1967, Charles F. Baker and John T. Dean to unnamed Grace Pastor. From this letter we learn that sometime in June 1967, Sam had sent out a packet containing some 20 pages of allegations against GBC. The purpose of this letter was to set straight some of the facts from the college's viewpoint for this pastor's consideration. This letter also states that the college had done everything in their power to keep the controversy from going public because of their desire that the GGF not suffer a split. So their main concern is the GGF not divide over this. So they're perceiving that what's going on here was leading to some type of a division in the Grace Gospel Fellowship. Quoting now from the letter. "We also want you to know that the college has done everything possible to keep this controversy from becoming public for fear that it might result in a split in our Grace Gospel Fellowship. We know, too, that members of the GGF National Council, of which Mr. Stamm is a member, have tried to persuade Mr. Stamm from publicizing this controversy, but to no avail. During the past 9 months, a number of meetings have been held with Mr. Stamm and one or two others who have backed him in these charges in an effort to resolve these problems. We have attempted to answer these charges in meetings and in writing, all of which have been rejected and labeled as, quote, smokescreen, defensiveness, and other like expressions, which are but other ways of saying we are hedging and not telling the truth. We therefore feel that Mr. Stamm bears the sole responsibility of bringing this conflict to the full constituency of the Grace Gospel Fellowship, and for many regrettable results which may issue therefrom." So they are saying the reason this is a controversy is because of Stamm. Root is basically saying Stamm is not behaving himself properly. The letter that we looked at in the last one from Roger Anderson to DeWitt, where he said that he perceived something like this was going to happen if they moved forward with the publication of the journal, and that he perceived that there were people that were involved in this that were jockeying for position or trying to better their standing in the GGF. All of these comments are pointing directly at who? Stamm. Okay? Since GBC was an approved organization of the GGF, when Baker wrote to the National Council of the GGF stating that, quote, he felt it was the moral duty of the council to either rescind that approval if Stamm's charges are true, or to reaffirm its approval if the charges are false. Accordingly, the council met on June 20, 1967, or thereabout. The letter was slightly deteriorated in this section, and passed the following two resolutions. The first one, the GGF Council declares itself in support of the administration of Grace Bible College and reaffirms its position that GBC is a GGF-approved organization. Second, the GGF Council states that to its knowledge, there is neither any trend toward liberalism at the school, nor is there any deviation from the GGF doctrinal statement being taught in Grace Bible College. Okay, so now we got official statements being issued here by the National Council of the GGF. Look, folks, I told you when we started this that I think the first mistake they made was to do this type of thing. When they organized Beyond the Local Church, now this is what you get. You get all this national politics and everybody drawn into this huge, massive mess that's occurring now. National Council's meeting, declaring resolutions, doing all the stuff that probably could have been avoided had this not been the case. This letter is crucial. Now, this is important. This letter is crucial in outlining the editorial policy of the Journal of Grace Theology and Stamm's actions with respect to it. Quote, "A considerable part of the controversy has been over two articles which appeared in the Journal of Grace Theology. As you know, the policy of the journal stated in the first issue is that articles which are too scholarly, controversial, or philosophical
or too closely aligned to the profession of gospel ministry itself to appear in our popular type publications will, if accepted, be presented within these pages. So that's a long-winded way of saying it was supposed to be a scholarly journal. Okay, the articles in there were more of a highfalutin nature than what they perceived to be the main purpose of their, you know, mainstream publication like Truth Magazine. Okay. Mr. Stamm refuses to accept this policy statement, but instead insists that the policy of the journal must be to accept only such articles which reflect the position of the college itself, and then on basis of his privately formulated policy for the journal, he has attacked the school as advocating every idea of every article appearing in the journal. So understand, the statement of the journal was, this is what this journal is going to be for. It's going to be for the expression of these views that are either too controversial, too philosophical, or too whatever for our mainstream publications, knowing that we're not necessarily advocating anything and everything that's in this journal. And what he's saying is that what Dean and Baker are saying is that Stamm has adopted his own private editorial policy and sought to impose it on the journal, saying that the journal should only publish articles that the school agrees with, when that wasn't what the journal said in its first issue it was supposed to be about. Everybody following that? Where did I leave off? Mr. Stamm refuses to accept this policy statement, but instead insists that the policy of the journal must be to accept only such articles which reflect the position of the college itself, and then on the basis of his privately formulated policy for the journal, he has attacked the school as advocating every idea of every article appearing in the journal. It may interest you to know that the editorial staff of the journal offered to publish Mr. Stamm's rebuttal to the article entitled The Spirit of Bereanism, to which he was so violently opposed that Mr. Stamm refused the offer, stating in a letter to Dr. Dean as of November 11, 1966, in the context of the present situation, I feel this should not be published in the journal. Now, I'm going to tell you my own personal private subjective opinion. I think this was absolutely wrong on Stamm's part, because he did not hesitate for a second to continue to excoriate the school in his own publication, the Berean Searchlight. Yet, he would not refuse to publish a rebuttal in the journal that he had a problem with and follow what would be considered to be, in my opinion, you know, the proper protocols for doing this sort of thing. So let me finish this quote and then we'll take questions. Pastor Jeff Farrell promised to write an answer to this article, but never did. Consequently, the hands of the editorial staff were tied in presenting Mr. Stamm's objections to this article. As we see it, the question boils down to this. Can the pastors who have been ordained by and who are members of the Grace Gospel Fellowship and who adhere to the doctrinal statement of the GGF be allowed to present their views in the journal? We believe that they should be allowed to do so, and that others who may disagree with their views can write the editor and express their views through letters to the editor column. This is the stated procedure of the journal. It is the responsibility of the authors to defend their own statement, not the editorial staff of the journal. An editorial in the fall issue 1966 of the journal made this clear, that articles in the journal express individual views and do not necessarily represent the views of the staff of the journal. End quote. Any thoughts on this? Yeah, Norm.
That's a pretty good one with the framer. I mean, when you consider all the things they were publishing, was it left to the reader to discern which they were for and which they were against?
I think at an intellectual level, I understand their distinction between their popular magazine and their theological journal. The purpose of the popular magazine is to support the people that are in the GGF in terms of their belief. The purpose of the journal would be to foster discussion amongst the pastors in the movement over theological issues. So I think if they have a disclaimer saying that this is not intended to be, that these articles are not a reflection of, you know, the editorial staff's beliefs, on the one hand, I don't see why that should have been a problem. But it was, and Roger Anderson in the letter from last week, or 2 weeks ago, said he thought and perceived that it would be a problem, and it did in fact become a problem. What these men are upset with Sam about is for what they perceive to be a fundamental duplicity, that he's criticizing them, excoriating them in private letters and statements written in the Searchlight, yet he's refusing to publish any sort of a statement in their journal to the article that he objected to. Yeah.
Do you know whether the people got those magazines or were there separate mailing
lists? The mailing lists were not identical. I know that for sure. And Stan's Berean Searchlight mailing list was and still is the most extensive mailing list in the movement. Stan sends a Berean Searchlight to more people than receive any other piece of monthly or, you know, like Truth and Flame or any of these. Sam's mailing list is the biggest. He's sending more information to more people than any of these other guys were. So more people were taking the Berean Searchlight than Truth Magazine. Okay? Lee?
Just a personal observation. And though I was not at the beginning of that controversy, I got into it in the late 70s when I embraced the grace message, and the only influence I had was from Stan and the Grace Bible College, and he was still a part of that time. But my personal opinion is that a lot of that split, a lot of the controversy fell along family lines. I think, quite frankly, the problem was the college was inbred. Married the family. And almost anybody who ended up on the college side were all relatives. The ones who departed in largely were not connected by marriage. And again, I think there's a legitimate sense in which we can apply the statement that blood is thicker than water. And I can tell you about any institution, including your own family. It's hard to discipline your own family. And it was hard. That would have been the heart of this, is because it fell along family lines. And because I know the men who went with the Sam group, they were not part of the family as such. And it's still true. Well, not as much now as it used to be, but. Anyway, that's just a personal comment or observation, whether it's true or not. I do think that any time you get an organization, what do they call it, even in politics, when you get that ingrained, that's hard to discipline.
I think, I think to say that's not a factor would be wrong. I agree with you that probably is a factor. Particularly when you start looking at, you know, what the relationships by marriage are. You know, for example, Raymond Rich, who's on the faculty, is DeWitt's father-in-law. That's just one. Then you've got Miss Pastor and Mrs. Baker that were, I'm doing things officially with the school. So certainly I think the family aspect is probably part of it.
Bill Rufus. Nancy is married to
the Riggs, right?
The Riggs, yeah. His daughter is. There are a lot of those there.
Yeah. In addition, the letter notes that, quote, within the past 3 weeks, would have been the first 3 weeks of June 1967, The college had received letters from many local Grace churches stating their confidence in the college. Two in Grand Rapids, two in Muskegon, Holland, Belmont, Moline, Ravenna, Grand Haven, and Volney, Michigan were named specifically. So those are all the VGF churches that surround us here in Michigan. Moreover, 39 pastors and 13 prominent laymen within the GGF had received Moreover, 39 pastors and 13 laymen within the GGF were received by the college, should say letters somewhere in there, voicing their confident support and rejection of the accusations made by Stan. The board of directors of Grace Bible College, at its most recent board meeting, that would have been June 24, 1967, prior to the publication of this letter, issued and signed the following resolution. Quote, "We, the members of the Board of Directors of Grace Bible College, hereby affirm our wholehearted confidence in and support of the administration and faculty of Grace Bible College. We want it to be known publicly that the board is and has been of one mind throughout this situation." End quote. Baker and Dean also wish to express their commitment to the Bible College philosophy, stating that they had no desire to, quote, be a liberal arts college. And here's their statement. "We want it to be understood also that Grace Bible College is pursuing a 10-year plan which is dedicated to the Bible College philosophy of requiring a Bible theology major and Christian service each semester of every student, and that we are not, nor do we have any interest in becoming a Christian liberal arts college." End quote. So, whether that ultimately has happened or not would probably, you know, be up for some discussion. But that's their statement in this letter at the end of June 1967 that appeared in Truth Magazine. To finish up this lesson, June 30 now, 1967, Stam sends a letter to DeWitt. Acknowledging receipt of DeWitt's letter dated June 25, Stam makes only 3 points. Number one, quote, "I think you overstate our views when you indicate that we believe there is apostasy at Grace Bible College. Our contention is that there has been, quote, a trend toward liberalism. This is different," according to Stam. Second, "As I read your letter, Dale, it appears to me to have a great deal to say which is beside the point. The fact is that a member of the official board advocates for the reading of immoral books by Christian college students, and that Brother Baker and Brother Dean have defended it. We believe this is unscriptural and sinful. America's youth has already gone far enough downhill morally reading such books." End quote. And third, "I take issue with you when you say that we denounce what we think Weddle's argument intends to say. What Weddle himself intended to say may be debated, but no one can debate what the article says. It is clear enough. It appears to me, Dale, that in, quote, intellectual circles, or should I say academic circles, the question is too often asked, but what does that word mean? Or what does this writer mean? Finally, everything is a gray blur and nothing is black and white. Fundamentalism? What does it mean? Liberalism? What does it mean? This man says so and so quite plainly, but what did he mean? It seems to be that this makes for the most confused kind of thinking. I go to a simple dictionary to look up liberalism and fundamentalism, and I find that they mean just what I thought they meant for many years. But the, quote, intellectual comes along and reevaluates everything until nothing seems to have a very specific meaning. God's best to you, Dale. Be assured that I do not hold the slightest ill will in my heart toward any of you." So there you have it. I take Stam to be sort of sticking a dagger in him there. saying, look, it's only amongst you intellectual guys in academia where things don't have, you know, where we question what everybody means when they say things. So here you have it, okay? You've got this situation that is stirring here, and it's not going to end well. And we've got, next week we're going to look at part four, the end of 67, and then what happens in 68. And the ultimate decision to leave, and then what the backlash is from Stamp's ultimate decision to leave. Just a couple comments I want to make. Again, I'm not trying to be an apologist necessarily for either side. I do perceive, though, that Pastor Stamp did not handle himself very well in this situation. I do think that he probably did make agreements, verbal agreements with people that he later violated by printing statements and sending letters and doing things that would have been a violation of what he sort of agreed he would do. I think he is possibly twisting some of the statements to his own advantage, and I think that he is demonstrating certain portions of his person that are going to come up later on in this class when he deals with Richard. In his debate, in his parting ways with Richard Jordan in the 1980s. The other side, I'm a little bit more unsure of what to make of it. Okay, part of me feels that the college and its faculty created such a nuanced statement that they were able to wiggle their way out of a lot of things by falling back on the position that they adopted. And I think that they were able to say to the constituency of the GGF, we're still dispensational, yet we're not teaching anything that's violating the doctrinal statement, yet many things were in there that were being taught and included in the curriculums and so forth that were, yeah, they weren't a violation of the doctrinal statement, but they were neo-evangelical in their fundamental philosophy. So you end up with a situation where both sides, in my perception, are partly right and partly wrong in terms of what's going on here. If you disagree, that's certainly fine. I perceive Stamm to be wrong mostly, not necessarily in where he ultimately falls in terms of leaving the GGF, but more so in his attitude and actions and how he deals with it. The college, I think technically they were not. Again, the argument is so nuanced that they can hold up the doctrinal statement and say we haven't taught anything contrary to these things, but there were a lot of things that were being added to that from the new evangelical agenda that would not have been necessarily accepted by a vast majority of the people within the constituency of the GGF. So does anybody have any questions or comments or anything about this? Lesson, yeah.
Okay, this comes back to my other question. There was Truth Magazine being sent out by the Grace Bible College, right? Now, who was sending out the Journal of Grace Theology?
The Journal of Grace Theology, as I understand it, was technically a theological journal of the faculty of the college.
Okay, so my question before, were those two things being sent to the same people?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Just going pastors, basically.
I believe the Journal of Grace Theology was always perceived to be more of a scholarly journal, so it was being sent to probably just the pastors and other institutions of higher learning. Because one of the things that they wanted to do via that journal is put, at least theoretically, is make Mid-Acts Pauline dispensationalism relevant to the theological world of their day. And you got to understand, Beverly, that in academia, that's how you do that. You do that by having a journal that has seriously minded scholarly articles in it. And that's what they were trying to do with that journal. which was a different purpose from what the Truth Magazine. And I should also say, the Truth Magazine was a joint effort, not only of the college, but also of the GGF. Okay? Now, eventually the college starts putting out something called Comment, which is just a college paper or something. I don't know exactly what year they started to do that, but Truth Magazine was the popular magazine, and it still is, for the GGF. This journal was always intended to be more of a theological, serious-minded, scholarly type articles.
As such, the journal would have been available in the library of any of these institutions that it was sent to.
That's the point, yes. So the idea was to get it on the stack in Kelvin Seminary, to get it on the stack at Union Seminary, to get it, you know, to get to send it to Dallas Theological Seminary, and try to make this brand of mid-Acts Pauline dispensationalism relevant in the theological world. But the thing, for internal reasons, fell apart before that really even got started. So when you look at an article like Spirit of Bereanism, there's a reason why the Spirit of Bereanism is in the journal and not in Truth Magazine. Okay? And what Sam is saying is, you shouldn't put anything in this journal that you wouldn't put in Truth Magazine. That's pretty much what he's saying. And what they're saying is, no, that's not the point. The point of the journal is not to be Truth Magazine. The point of the journal is to be a journal. And therefore, this is the type of thing we're going to put in the journal. And Sam was, and they say that in their, you know, in their editorial procedural statements in published inside every issue of the journal. But Sam's attitude was, no, if you're going to put something out, it better represent the doctrine and theology of the college. And they had a fundamental disagreement about that. And then he refused to publish his rebuttal in that journal while he was writing all these private letters and articles in his own paper and refusing to put a statement there. So, any other questions or comments? Alright, I appreciate your attention. We're done a couple minutes early. Next week we will look at the next piece in this and start working our way towards bringing this section of the class to a conclusion and then moving on to talking about some things with Brother Jordan, the 1980s and the 1990s as well. So, thanks for your attention.